So the bartender lived. The bartender never gets killed.
Welcome to the Don't Panic Radio Show. I'm Steve Benson. That's Paul Schultz, and nothing you're about to hear is true. As I've mentioned to you in weeks past, mm-hmm. I got myself caught up in a few political discussions. And
you never studied.
I finally got myself back out.
Yeah.
Like, as of last night. And it didn't have anything to do with any specific political discussion that I had. Mm-hmm. It was more like, wait a minute, I was so much happier before I started getting myself caught up in these things.
Right.
So I ran around and did a bunch of unfollowing. So, and that gets to the, you know, like the purpose of the show, right? Don't panic, man.
Right.
Just, you know, relax. Everything will be fine. Walk away for 2 weeks. Come back. If the shit hasn't hit the fan, then you realize everything's okay.
If my month and a half of being completely cut off from the world has proven anything, nothing happens. So don't panic about it.
You know what's funny? Speaking of don't panic, just today, we're recording last Wednesday. I think it was today or yesterday. Elon Musk, which is, remember that? We used to wear that in high school because we thought we could get the chicks.
That's right.
Elon Musk. It's what chicks dig. Anyway, so he's the CEO or whatever of SpaceX, mm-hmm. and he launched a rocket today.
And wait a minute. Say SpaceX again.
SpaceX.
Again. Sounds like you're saying space sex.
Space sex. Well, that's probably why he picked that name.
Yeah.
He's the quintessential nerd that probably didn't get laid at all in high school or college and made good. So now he's just going nuts. And this is how I know he didn't get laid in high school. So he put his own personal car, a Tesla Roadster, mm-hmm. on the rocket. And once the rocket got into orbit, he launched the car out into space and toward Mars, right? And he's got like a live camera feed, like, so that you could see. And he's got like this mannequin driving the car. Like, there's this mannequin with its hands on the wheel. It's got a helmet and stuff. It's sitting in the driver's seat. And it's doing like, it's got its hands on the wheel and it's kind of doing this. But the car is just kind of floating in space. And on the dashboard, you can see over the mannequin's shoulder, on the little display thing, you know, like where the navigation thing would be, mm-hmm. in big, bold, reassuring letters, it says, "Don't panic."
Oh, man. I know what a new cover photo is going to be. Like, I'm telling you what, he must have gotten that. He must have got that idea from the heavy metal movie. You remember that in the beginning?
Yeah.
Where the dude comes down out of the space shuttle. This case, it was like a 50-something Corvette doing re-entry. And when I first saw those pictures, that is the first thing I thought of. And then my buddy Jay starts sending me pictures of, what is it, Tesla plays Bowie, and then there's a picture of Bowie, yes. and saying, "Bowie plays Tesla."
Nice. Okay, so today we're going to do our usual opening banter that you've come to know and love.
Hopefully.
Then we're going to introduce a new segment that fans of history are going to enjoy. It's a new segment we call Softcore History.
Oh, yeah. And why do we call it Softcore History?
Well, first of all, it was inspired. I'm inspired. I've been inspired to know more about history and to share more about history by Dan Carlin, the host of Hardcore History.
Mm-hmm.
And so I threw out there the idea to Paul about, hey, it's a convoluted, it's like one of those things where you're in the car, you end up talking about like kids getting choking on lollipops while playing hopscotch. And you're like, how did we get on this topic? You're like, well, you mentioned seaweed. And then he said, what if they had a seaweed lollipop? And then like you connect all these dots and you get to a thing. So I could go through all the dots that we connected, but let's just say through collaboration, we decided to do a weekly, might not be, I don't know how often it'll be, but we're going to do a segment on history where we're going to pick a topical, like Paul likes to put the, I'm talking as if you're not actually sitting there. I'm right
here. I'm right anyway, here, dude.
You know, you like to do these this day in history or whatever, the so-and-so was born.
Yes.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
And so I was thinking, well, we could tie that in, like something, either something that happened right around when the show is, mm-hmm. or somebody who was born or died, you know, so it could be like something that around the date, but it's interesting. And I thought I could tell a story, and it was sort of inspired by Dan Carlin's Hardcore History and Daniela Bellelli's History on Fire, but also, Murder in a Small Town, or Small Town Murder, or whatever. Those guys that did the show about a murder in LaPorte that happened in the early 80s.
Yes. several murders that happened in the 80s.
So you came up with the name Softcore History, so you can explain why.
Well, we call it Softcore History because we don't have time to probe any deeper.
You won't see the actual penetration. It'll be implied. All right, and then we'll do some T&D. We've been promising T&D for weeks. Swear to God, the only thing we have is the usual opening banter.
Which is just about up.
Then we're going to do this story, and then we're going to get right into T&D. Sound good? You with us for the next hour?
There's a payoff in there somewhere.
All right, so why don't you go ahead and play the Softcore History theme song. Welcome to the first edition of Softcore History. And seriously, guys, I mean, we don't ask for a dime, right? We never ask for money. But we do ask for feedback. And right. If you like this segment, please let us know. Because I know that we say we don't do show prep, but I actually did put some work into this one this week.
Our show prep, or lack thereof, is legendary.
Yes. But I think this segment needs preparation. Otherwise, it's just going to be like, whatever. In fact, that was one of the things I didn't like about those guys, the small town murder guys. Mm-hmm. It's like, they knew jack shit about Indiana.
Yeah.
It's like, could you not like at least look up Indiana on Wikipedia? I mean,
some of their statistics were way off, but yeah, again, they were just pulling it off of the internet.
Yeah, they're like, oh, the mayor in LaPorte's Democrat? Really? I thought Indiana was. It's do you just fuck off? All right, I digress. So anyway, so I did put some work into this. If it doesn't show, and you're like, wow, you worked on that, let us know that you didn't like that, or your silence will tell us that. But if you like it and you want more of these, I mean, we'll do more of these. We'll find some other stories. Or if you have a suggestion for a story, let us know that too. Okay, this is someone who was born in the vicinity of when the show will be released. So that's the tie-in to the chronological temporal piece. Okay, if you're in your car, don't close your eyes. If you're not in your car and you're just sitting listening to this, I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. If you are in your car, stop thinking about work, stop fidgeting with the radio, and just try to concentrate on this. Because I want you to sort of imagine the last time you were in some really, really extreme cold. Like the kind where the wind is hurting your face and it's dark and the wind is whipping around and you're walking like longer than you really thought you would have to walk. Maybe your car is parked farther away, or maybe you had to park far away from the restaurant that you're walking to, or you went out to get the mail at the end of your driveway and you're walking back and going, damn, it is cold. Your face hurts. Your fingers are like tingling because it's so cold. Your toes are frozen, but you keep going because you know that in just a few steps is the, like, you can get out of the wind in your car, or you can go to that glowing warmth of your home or that restaurant that you're walking to. Think about that. How cold was it? It could have been really recently. When, if you're listening to this soon after it was released, it's the middle of winter, and I just experienced this a week or two ago, walking across, like, felt like the tundra. And my face hurt. And I thought, how, the air shouldn't make my face hurt. So how cold was it? Was it 20? Or 10? Like wind chills below zero? Now, imagine you're in that same bone-chilling, like skin-burning cold, okay? This time, though, instead of just dark, it's like dark, like country dark, right? Like dark, dark. And it's not 20 or 10. It's like minus 20. And the wind chills minus 50 or 60, okay? The wind, the cold is what you experience when you just imagine that, but it's way colder than that. And there's no car or warm house in sight. In fact, there's no decent shelter or even civilization at all for like hundreds of miles or maybe even like a few thousand miles. You can't even wrap your head around that. If you can picture this, it might give you a slight inkling of what it must have been like in the early 20th century when the explorer Ernest Shackleton and his men were in the middle of the Antarctic ice sheet and their ship was stuck in the ice in the middle of the Antarctic winter in 1915. There ain't no GPS. There ain't no walkie-talkie. There ain't no satellite phone. There's no helicopter. Shit, there's not even airplanes.
The world was much bigger.
Yes, it was. And so this is the story of Ernest Shackleton and the Endurance Expedition of 1914 to 1916. What's the tie-in? Well, he was born February 15th, 1874. So what was he, 30 in his 30s?
Think about what you were doing in your 30s.
Shit. Man, I couldn't walk from my car to work without complaining. He fits with our show very well because he was a very ambitious man. But his accomplishments never really seemed to live up to his desire for like a fast track to wealth and security. right? He had all the, he was like the Ralph Cramden of explorers, right? He had all these get rich quick ideas, and he would go out there and it would always fail.
You just know I'm superimposing Ralph and Ed in the frozen tundra for the
he
show.
Was like, he was like Sir Scott, the guy, or Sir Edmondson, the guy that, like, the first guy to make it to the South Pole, mm-hmm. only if he were Ralph Cramden and Norton was helping him. But anyway, by 1914, he tried earlier. He was on other expeditions to, like, try to make it to the South Pole first, but he was beaten to that. And so, like, everything he tried, it didn't work. So by 1914, all the major Antarctic exploration milestones had been met, except one. And it was to cross the continent, while crossing through the South Pole. Nobody had done that. So he thought, well, I'll be the first one to do that. Well, as you might imagine, based on this introduction, the expedition never made the goal. In fact, they never made it to the actual Antarctica land. So what happened is, so they're heading toward land, and they're going through the ice. And you've seen the shows where the ship's like trying to break its way through the ice.
Mm-hmm.
Only, you know, I think by this time they've got some, the sails or this, you know, sail technology is better than it has been. So they're able to get some speed to ram through the ice, but right. they get stuck.
Right.
So like, shit. So what do they do? All right, everybody get off the boat and push. That's what we do when we get stuck, right?
That's right.
but when it's like, get off the boat and push, with, you got these giant, like, they have pictures. One of the great things about this expedition is one of the guys that went was a photographer.
Yeah.
With one of the early cameras.
Yeah.
It was one of those cameras where we saw in all the cartoons when we were kids, where you put the big cloth over your head and it's got the accordion out front and the film's like this big glass plate that you stick in there.
Yeah, it was a very, very photographed expedition.
One of the things Shackleton said after they got stuck is he said, like, you'll find out in a little bit here that they had to abandon the ship and walk. And the guy with the camera's like, so I suppose you want me to leave the film behind? He's like, no. Whatever you do, bring the film with you. And people are arguing, like, how about food? How about clothing? He's like, no, bring the film. And the photos are beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just gorgeous. So you got these pictures of these guys with these giant saws, and they tied ropes to the boat. Like, this is a big ship, right? Big mm-hmm. sailing ship. And these guys got these ropes trying to pull the ship, you know? Like, we're stuck, man. They're like, nah, we're stuck.
Rocket. Come on, rocket.
They did. They rocked it. Dude, like, he's like, okay, pull it backwards and then pull it forwards.
Put some sticks under it. Wait, where are we going to get sticks?
You're going to flood it.
Literally.
So they tried that for a while. And then finally he's like, this is not working. Right, we're wasting our energy. So he called all that off, but he did to keep people motivated and like purpose to live. He still had like a really regimented thing. Like, they kept the ship clean. Like, they were washing the ship, right. And every night they would have, like, they would dress up in costumes and have plays and sing. So relatively speaking, like they had it kind of good,
mm-hmm.
because they had heat. And they had plenty of stores, plenty of food and entertainment. They were entertained. Who knows? Back in those days, I don't think men, loving men in that way was frowned upon as much as it is now. So who knows? Dude, who knows what they did?
When you're right? stranded in the Antarctic,
yeah.
What happens in the Antarctic stays in the Antarctic.
So check this out. So they're waiting for the, so they thought, we'll just sit here and wait for the ice to break up, right? Because we'll sit here through the Antarctic winter, which was like from like, around February, late February, they got stuck. They're just sitting there. And then the winter in the Antarctic is our summer, right? So they just, they sit there for 8 months, right? Just hanging out, doing God knows what. Fine. Right? Everything's frozen. But then when the spring starts to come, which is around, like September, October, well, ice starts to melt somewhere and the ice starts to shift. Mm-hmm. If you've ever seen like a frozen lake, you start to see that ice melting and it starts to move around and stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, the way it was shifting, it started crushing the ship. And it was real clear that this ship was being basically crushed by the ice, right? So during one night, the ice crushed the ship and Shackleton was like, get everything off the ship. We're leaving. We got to go. Well, it turns out, it's like, why didn't you do that sooner? Well, they didn't do it sooner because basically, if you've seen these pictures of Antarctica, it's the ice looks like mountains, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why they didn't take off. The nearest island, like the nearest land where they had put some food stores earlier, was like 300 miles away. So what are you going to walk there? Not if you don't have to. Well, now they had to, right? Mm-hmm. So they grabbed the lifeboats. They like put shit in the lifeboats and started walking. And they, you know, struggled over, like, there's these ridges and, like, these ice. Like, it's ice, man.
Yeah, it's not just like you're ice skating. It's
there's not, no Zamboni.
No, not even a macaroni.
So they did this for 3 days. And after 3 days, they had gone 2 miles.
That sounds like my marriage.
So do the math, right? How long is it going to take to go 300 something miles, right? So these are 28 dudes on this ship. You're like, oh, how many people were we talking? So including Shackleton, 28 men, 3 days, 2 miles. He's like, it's like the jerk, right? When he's like hitchhiking, right? And he's outside the house. Oh, I wonder how Nathan's doing. Nathan. Hey, Nathan, how you doing? Not too bad. The guy picks him up and he's like, where are you going? I'm going to wherever. He's like, where are you going? I'm going to the end of this fence right here. You know, it's like that. Because the ship hadn't yet like sunk. It was just being crushed. And so Shackleton's like, okay, somebody go back to the boat and get some more shit. We're camping here. So it's like 3 days, lots of work, 2 miles, walk back to the ship.
What's crazy is they're walking and walking and walking and the ship isn't getting any smaller. They're just like, it's like, you know, when you see the mountains, you know, in Colorado and you're headed towards them, it takes you like all day to get there. Well, they got this stupid boat back there that isn't, they're just laughing at them as they're trudging on inches per hour.
Well, fortunately for them, eventually the ice broke the ship to the point where it just sank.
Oh, okay.
So they didn't have to look at it anymore. That all happened while they decided to just like camp, like right where they were. Well, it turns out all, you know, as everything's like melting and moving, they're like basically sitting on an iceberg and it's moving around. They ended up missing the first island they were going to. So they ran out of food, ended up having to kill and eat their dogs, which is sad, but I hear dog tastes pretty good.
I think the dogs were probably happy to be food at that point.
Yeah, they're like, fuck this. I think Samuel Jackson was on this trip. He said, I don't eat dog either. Well, there's nothing else. Pass the dog.
That's right. That's a dog burger joint, isn't it?
Now that's a tasty dog burger. All right, eventually, couldn't get much worse, right? They're probably all going to die, right, on the ice at this point, because now you've eaten your dogs. All you got's these lifeboats. What good are they on ice? You can go 2 miles every 3 days, and there's basically no hope. I mean, what are you going to do? You got no radio, you got nothing. Well, eventually the ice opens up. Like they see, in fact, it starts breaking up so fast that where they're sitting, like this is 28 dudes, right? And three lifeboats, and you're spread out a little bit, and it cracks like right down the middle, like in the cartoons, right? Like right down the middle, and everybody's looking at each other like, what do we do? And Shackleton's like, everybody on that one. So they get all the boats and they throw the boats over to the other one, and they're like, whew, well, good thing we didn't die there. Okay, I guess we're going to die on this one. But finally, the water opens up, and they're like, all right, everybody in the boats, we're going to Elephant Island, which I find interesting that there's an island down by Antarctica called Elephant Island.
I don't want to meet no Antarctic elephants. Something out of The Hobbit or Battle of 12 Armies or whatever the fuck.
Or Hoth. Probably look like one of those yaki yaki things. Well, maybe the Indians colonized that island and brought elephants with them. Or maybe the Persians. So they jump in these boats, and there's gale force winds, there's storms. I mean, the water down there, if you think about Antarctica, right? Mm-hmm. If you look at a globe, like turn your globe upside down, you got this island, right? It's not an island, it's a continent, right? You got this continent, but yes, all the way around it is water, right? Think about the sea between, think about the Atlantic Ocean between like United States or, the Americas and Europe. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of flowing water, but it's broken up by these continents, right? Mm-hmm. Even in the Pacific, in the Northern Pacific, the currents get so strong because of the wind and the whatever, but still you have continents to break it up. You look down there around Antarctica, there's nothing. There's nothing breaking up this water. It's just going around and around and around. Giant waves, somehow 7 days in these freaking lifeboats, they make it to this island, all right? And now they're stranded on an island. It's like Gilligan's Island, only if you've already been through Antarctic hell, and back, right? The nearest civilization is over 800 miles away at a place called South Georgia Island, right? So Shackleton's like, all right, 23 of you stay here. I'll take 5 of you. We'll take a boat. We'll go there. And they're like, that's silly. You're going to die. He's like, well, we're either going to die doing that or die. Either way, we're dying, right? So let's get in the boat and go. So somehow they get in this boat and they're going across, like there's 50, 60 foot waves, right? Mm-hmm. How are they navigating? They got no GPS, right? Dude has a sextant.
Yeah.
Right? But you have to see the sun in order to use a sextant.
Yeah.
So he has to wait until they get on top of one of the waves and like look, oh, there's the sun. Okay, I'll take a look. All right. And somehow it's like if you had an Olympic sized swimming pool and you floated like a pea, like a floating pea out in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. Right. And then a mosquito had to go fly, like, wait, what's something that swims? Not a mosquito. Oh, yeah.
Mosquitoes dance on the water, though.
That's a swimming mosquito. Now, a swimming mosquito has to hit that. Like, the odds are astronomical, but somehow they do it, right? They get to this, they figure out how to get to this island. It's like, thank God. Well, first of all, they have to go through a bunch of shit to get, because, you don't just, it's not like there's a harbor and like some piers. It's not like a lighthouse and all this. There's like rocks and all this stuff they have to struggle through to get. Finally get there, like they're like a couple of the guys almost died, like trying to get to the shore. Finally get on the shore. They look around and they know there's civilization on here, but they look around and they go, fuck, we're on the wrong side of the island. Which wouldn't be so bad if it was Gilligan's Island, right? Because now all you got to do is walk through the jungle, maybe not get eaten by cannibals, and get to the other side.
That's right.
Problem is, there's a giant mountain range in between on where they are on their side of the island and the whaling station on the other side of the island. So they got to cross a mountain range that, by the way, no one has ever crossed before. But somehow they do. And in fact, not only it's 32 miles, it's like steep mountains. It's like regular mountain climbing shit, right?
Yeah.
Not only had nobody ever done it, this is 1916.
You know what it is? It's that thing where, say, you've traveled across like three states and you still got about like 15 miles and you got to pee. You know what? I've been through, you know, 800 miles. I'm going to go. 15 miles ain't nothing.
He's like, fuck it, man. I've been frozen on an Antarctic ice sheet.
Ate my damn dog.
Thought I was going to die on the trip over to Elephant Island. Thought I was going to die on Elephant Island. Thought I was going to die getting here. Like, fuck it. Let's climb this goddamn mountain. But the next time anybody ever climbed that, like went over that mountain range,
mm-hmm.
1955.
That's because they knew better.
It's like, fuck that. All right. So they get like really, they don't know if they're close or not. Turns out they were close. Mm-hmm. But they get to the top of this ridge. It's like almost straight down. They like try to walk down it, but they keep slipping. And they're like, screw it. They make a sled out of their rope. They have a rope sled. And they, like, these three guys jump on this rope sled and just go sledding down. And they're like, whatever happens, happens, right?
It's got like the saber dance music going in the background as they're sliding down the hill.
So they go into this fog bank, right? So now they really don't know where they're going. And they go through the fog bank and come out the other end and like slide to a halt, right? Again, like the cartoons, like. And they stop and they look around and there's some dudes standing there. And they're like, can I help you? And Shackleton knows the guy. Like he knows him. He's like, it's Shackleton. And the guy's like, no. And he's like, no, it's me. He's like, you sound like him. You don't look like him. Because, you know, at this point, damn.
Yeah.
Dude needs a shower, maybe a haircut. All right. So anyway, so he made it there. So, you know, the rest, like he managed to get a boat, send the boat back to Elephant Island to rescue all of his guys. Of the 28 men who went out on the expedition, right? After spending the winter on the ice, frigid lifeboat ride to Elephant Island, 16-day journey through 50-foot waves to get to South Georgia Island, climbing over these mountains that nobody had ever done before. All 28 men survived. Nobody died, right? So he gets a... Listen, they left England in 1914. Right? Mm-hmm. August. And they made it back to civilization in August 1916.
Right.
And he gets up and he's just like, one of the first questions he asks is like, so who won the war? Right? Because it's supposed to be like Germany does its thing. British Expeditionary Force goes in. They're supposed to push them back. Supposed to be Pete. Like, it's just supposed to be this real quick run thing, right?
Yeah.
World War One. If you know anything about World War One, it was supposed to just be this, like, boom, 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 done, right? Peace. So these guys get back and they're like, all right, who won the war? Well.
I guarantee of those, were the 28 guys?
Yeah.
After that, none of them hung out with anybody in that group. They're like, fuck it. We've told all the stories. We have, no, it's not happening. We're not even. I'm not even sending you Christmas cards. It's just not going to happen.
Well, some of them, when they got back, actually went to fight in World War One.
Why would you do that?
I'm not sure they had a choice.
That's true. You are pushing your luck.
And actually, some of them were killed in action, World War One. Ernest Shackleton actually went back with his second in command, Worsley, to attempt another expedition to Antarctica in 1922. And they were going to leave. They were actually headed back to Antarctica. He was on South Georgia Island, the same island where he built the sled, where he took the rope sled down to the whaling station. Dropped dead of a heart attack. 47.
His heart said, nope.
Yeah, his heart's like, I ain't going back there. You go if you want to. I ain't going.
I want to see the Mythbusters guys make a rope sled.
I like that idea. Because, you know what? There's no recordings. There's no cameras. It's like all we got is their word to go on. How do we know they actually made a rope sled? How do we know they didn't actually land on the other side of the island and made all this shit up? Like, how do we know that they ever went to Antarctica? Well, they got all the pictures.
You know how it is when you're like a little bit late showing up for dinner or whatever, and you have to like embellish why you're late. I'm sure there might be a little bit of embellishment.
There was this icicle, and I had to make a rope sled. And
those rope sleds have been known to kill people.
So, dude, at 47, by the way, I'm 48, almost 49, right? Dude, at 47, I've seen pictures of him, like, a couple of years before he died. Dude looks in his 60s, at least. But I don't blame him. Antarctica, all that shit, I'd look old, too. 47, dies of a heart attack. His wife has him buried at South Georgia Island. And I think one of my bucket list items is to go to South Georgia Island and see the grave of Ernie Shackleton. Turns out, as I said in the beginning, you know, when he died, like he went on a lot of expeditions, didn't accomplish any of his goals. And when he died, he was deep in debt. So he left this debt to his family and was pretty much forgotten to history because, I mean, let's face it. If you weren't the first to do something, if you failed at something, ain't nobody trying to remember you, right?
Yeah, which is a bit of a shame because just the sheer, I mean, like you said in the beginning, you know, we bitch when we got to go out and get the mail in the wintertime. The success in this case would be just human endurance.
Yeah, and you know, that was sort of rediscovered in the late 20th century. Because the man was a hero. I mean, there's no other way of looking at it. And, you know, there's plenty of projects in my life where I've gone, well, that sucked. That didn't accomplish what it needed to accomplish. But you know what? We learned something, and the people learned something. I'll tell you what. You know who said it best? Sir Raymond Priestley. Scott and Edmondson raced for the South Pole. Edmondson ended up doing it, but Scott, you know, accomplished all these other things. So these are the other two names you'll hear in this quote. And I quote, Scott for scientific method, Amundsen for speed and efficiency. But when disaster strikes and all hope is gone, get down on your knees and pray for Shackleton.
I was an Eskimo. Frozen wind began to blow. I
under my boots and around my toes. Frost that bit the ground below. Was 100 degrees below zero. And my mama cried. And my mama cried. Save your money, don't go to the show. Well, I turned around and I said, ho, ho. Well, I turned around and I said, ho, ho. Well, I turned around and I said, ho, ho. And the northern lights commenced to glow. And she said, with a tear in her eye, watch out where the huskies go, don't you eat that yellow snow. Watch out where the huskies go, don't you eat that yellow snow. Well, right about that time, people, a fur trapper who was strictly from commercial had the unmitigated audacity to jump up from behind my igloo. Peek-a-boo. And he started in the whipping on my favorite baby seal with a lead-filled snowshoe. I said, with a lead. A lead-filled snowshoe. He said, peek-a-boo. The lead, with a lead-filled snowshoe. He said, peek-a-boo. He went right upside the head of my favorite baby seal. He went whap with a lead-filled snowshoe and hit him on the nose and he hit him on the fin and he. That got me just about as evil as an Eskimo boy can be. So I bent down and I reached down and I scooped down and I gathered up a generous mitten full of the deadly
yellow snow.
The deadly yellow snow from right there where the huskies go. Whereupon I proceeded to take that mitten full of the deadly yellow snow crystals and rub it all into his beady little eyes with a vigorous circular motion hitherto unknown to the people in this area, but destined to take the place of the mud shark in your mythology. Here it goes now, the circular motion, rub it! And then in a fit of anger, and I pounced again. Great googly moogly. I jumped up and down the chest of a. I injured the fur trap. Well, he was very upset, as you can understand. And rightly so, because the deadly yellow snow crystals had deprived him of his sight. And he stood up and he looked around and he said, I can't see. Yeah. I can't see. Stuffed it in my right eye.
He took a dog to a snow cone and stuffed it in my other eye. And the husky wee wee, I mean the doggy wee wee, has blinded me. And I can't see temporarily. Well, the fur trapper stood there with his arms outstretched across the frozen white wasteland, trying to figure out what he's gonna do about his deflicted eyes. And it was at that precise moment that he remembered an ancient Eskimo legend wherein it is written on whatever it is that they write it on up there, that if anything bad ever happens to your eyes as a result of some sort of conflict with anyone named Nanook, the only way you can get it fixed up is to go trudging across the tundra, mile after mile. Trudging across the tundra, right down to the parish of St. Alfonso.
Between the time when the oceans drank Atlantis and the rise of the sons of Arius, there was an age undreamed of. Let me tell you of the days of high adventure.
Upon receiving message that she was needed in the kingdom of Val, Sally of the leg warmers grabbed her sword and headed across the mountains, ironically enough, to her home kingdom to revisit Nasniv Trollslayer, king of Valis. Along the way, she encountered a small village that, as it turns out, was infested and overrun by bugbears, leader of which was the notorious Bertram, who, in cahoots with his half-elven Phoebe Cates' girlfriend...
Not to be confused with Jesse.
That's right, not to be confused with Jesse. Almost did her in, but she managed to defeat Bertram, freeing the village from the bugbear's iron clutches, but at a cost of physical injury. She was referred to by the innkeeper to seek out Cassandra the healer.
Ah, Cassandra the healer.
That's right, and Cassandra the healer, who also had a pen full of goats.
I love goats.
I know you do.
Goats are cute.
Anyway, Cassandra gives her a potion to heal up her wounds, but at the same time also poisoned her and told her within 24 hours the poison was going to set in if she did not go to a cave to the south of the village along the foothills to retrieve mushrooms from a hidden cave that she could use to make the potion that would cure Sally of this potentially deadly disease.
Sally's super confused. She's like, you could have just not poisoned me in the first place.
That's right.
I mean, making me go, you poison me, I'll go get the mushrooms. It makes no sense. What are you? What are you, a pharmaceutical company? You make me sick so I have to buy your drugs?
You're like Henry Hill at the end of Goodfellas. I had to stir the pasta, go pick up the handguns. All the while the helicopters were following me. So Sally decided to head south after giving Cassandra a tongue lashing, and not the kind that Cassandra and Sally would probably both prefer.
Not the good kind.
Not the good kind of tongue lashing. So, Sally?
Yes.
You head south.
Yes.
Yes. You head south.
Yes, I do.
Along the foothills. I head south
toward the cave. I'm walking, and I'm being careful. All right, let's just everybody pretend I sound like a woman. I know it's not much of a stretch, but let's just pretend I sound like a woman.
Especially a 18 charisma Tawny Katan Whitesnake video hot woman.
Here, let me help you. I can't make up my mind. I've had everything handed to me on a silver platter because I'm hot.
Essentially. Yes, it does.
All right. So, yeah. Going all south. Yeah. Headed to the cave.
You're told it's a couple of miles south along the foothills. To get the magic shrooms to concoct your...
And is there a road that I can take?
No, there's not so much a road as... I mean, you can see that it's been tread. I wouldn't even call it a path so much. But being as it is like the foothills of these mountains, and the mountains are very distinct... You figure, yeah, people follow along here because there are various footprints, be it animal or humanoid. But I would hesitate to call it a path.
Well, whatever you call it, I'm taking it.
All right. Well, you know you have to go a couple of miles. So at some point, you figure you will come into contact with a cave. You trudge on for about 2 or 3 hours. And all the while you're thinking, to my left, could I make it to Valis and possibly get cured? Nope. But then you realize we're talking much like, you know, Ernest Shackleton. There's a lot of real estate and a lot of terrain that is not so friendly betwixt
you and Valis. Let me make this easy for you. I'm going to the cave to get the mushrooms.
Mm-hmm. But the thought is there in the back of your
mind.
Because I'm the DM.
Okay.
I put it there.
So the thought's there.
Okay, all right. Save versus spell.
20.
It doesn't even enter your mind to take off in that direction.
Okay. Going to the cave.
All right. All right, so after 2 or 3 hours walking along the foothills, make a save versus surprise.
I got an 8.
You are not surprised.
Woohoo, I'm not surprised.
When from overhead, there's like a sheer cliff face of about maybe 15, 20 feet. This rock about the size of a grapefruit comes careening over and misses you. By inches. Thunk. What do you do?
Oh, I look for a way to climb the rock face to go up there to figure out why there's a rock the size of a grapefruit being thrown at me. So I'm going to go straight toward the danger.
Okay, so just beyond this little sheer cliff facing, you see where there's kind of a path that goes up.
So I'm going to run up the path.
All right.
With my bastard sword drawn.
All right.
To see who threw a rock at me.
You get to the top of the path and roll initiative.
I hope a low number is good.
Yes, in this game, yes.
I got a 1.
And I have a 10, so we're going you, me. All right. At the top of the path, you see... 2 more bugbears.
Oh.
Now, these guys look a little worse for wear. Now, Bertram was geared up. Now, you remember that the bartender told you that because you had killed Bertram, his flunkies probably scattered. Well, these two guys look like they look like probably a couple of Shackleton's, you know, buddies. They're like... You know, you don't see a sword or a spear anywhere. Their armor is just like piecemealed together. They have large piles of rocks about the size of grapefruits and a little bit bigger here and there.
Yeah.
It's your attack. What do you do?
I kill the one closest to me with my bastard sword.
You attempt to kill. Okay, his armor class is 5. So you take a swing.
18.
Boom. All right, do your damage to the first guy on your left, essentially.
2. I rolled a 1, and I get plus 1. So I did 2 damage.
Well, you've been walking for several hours, and you're a little winded. 2 points?
Plus, I still have that, like, afterglow after having sex.
That's right. You're kind of languid and, you know, a little, your muscles are a little soft. And, you know, you don't want nobody to touch you because you're a woman. Like, don't touch me. Don't touch me. That's exactly what it sounds like. All right. Well, seeing as you attacked him and he's within hand-to-hand range and he has no weapons on you, he's going to just swing at you blindly with his fists. And he misses. The second guy runs up on you and attempts to hit you as well, and he also completely misses. Your turn.
All right, I'm going to take my turn to say, what in the flea farin fuck are you guys doing throwing rocks at me? You got no weapons. My next attack is going to kill you both. What's up?
He's like, the first one's like, we have plenty of weapons over there. And he points to the piles of rocks. And another one goes, and we have these four weapons. And he holds up his big, hairy, bugberry fists.
Dumbass. I'm leaving.
Make an intelligence roll. You need a 7 or better. Get between a 7 and a whatever your intelligence is on a 20-sider.
I got a 15, and my intelligence is a 15.
Okay, you made it.
All right.
As you're talking, you hear this noise from one of them.
Sounds like my dog when she's about to throw up.
But in this case, it's that hunger pain you get in the morning when you realize you forgot to eat after you had an espresso. So you figure they're desperate and hungry and
they're hungry. Hunting.
They are hunting. You figure they probably... They stuck around after the rest of them took off, and they've been using... This is an ambush site where they hope to kill things to eat.
You guys are pathetic.
Now, Pretty much.
Did I use my turn to ask them that question, or can I still attack?
But they replied, so it's your move.
Okay. I'm just going to kill them. I got no sympathy for these hungry... Bertram.
They already ate their dogs.
Bugbear things, right? I'm just going to put them out of their misery. I missed.
Whoosh. Okay. Well, then the first guy takes a swing at you. He misses. Second guy takes a swing. And he misses.
Miss.
Miss. Miss.
Hit!
Woohoo! I mean,
1d12 plus 1. 6.
Oh, that hurt. that would be my turn. Oh, shit. The one you fucked up, he hits you with a vengeance.
Nice.
And gets double damage on your ass, which is going to be a lot. Except in my case, it won't be, because that's just how things go. What, I got one goddamn foresighter? Yeah, well, a lot turned out to be 4 points damage.
All right.
Because he's just hitting you bare-fisted. No pun intended.
All right.
The second guy misses.
Hit.
On the first guy, I assume?
Yes.
All right.
8 damage.
He goes down like a sack of potatoes.
Nice. I love potatoes.
Me too.
So I make French fries out of him.
Mm. Now, do you? What's your favorite potato? Do you go with red potatoes, gold potatoes?
My favorite potato is Yukon Gold.
Mmm. I prefer the red potatoes in when I'm putting them in stuff, just for like the different color to add. But yes, Yukon Gold are amazing potatoes.
Yeah. Although, you know, if I really got into the potato, like, you know what's weird these days is people get into shit. Like, oh, let's have some ribs. Well, what kind of ribs do you like? You like Memphis, St. Louis, baby back, baby, country, full on, whatever. You smoke them, you grill them, what do you do? And how long do you smoke them? What kind of wood do you use to smoke them? Like, it just used to be, you just eat ribs, right? And so that whole movement has not made it to the potato yet. But I imagine it will. And people will be like, well, you can't just say what's your favorite potato. It's got to be like, what are you doing with that potato? I mean, the mashed potatoes is the Yukon Gold. If you're going to make French fries, you can't beat the Idaho. You're the russet for the baked potato. Red potato is really good in a roast, but you got to leave that skin on. You don't want to leave the skin on the New Zealand pfeffer potato or whatever. And like somebody's going to come out with a book, like everything about the potato. Then you know what it all is? It's one more way to make me feel like an idiot.
Don't panic about the potato. All this talk of potatoes has made the surviving bugbear extremely hungry. So he's the only one alive at the moment. So he's going to take a swing at you. And totally misses.
Alrighty. I missed him.
That's a miss.
Miss.
It's like we're trying to get a waitress. Miss.
Hit.
Woohoo! I mean,
Seven.
Ooh, damn, you cut him down. He's pretty bad off.
Did he go down like a sack of russet potatoes or a sack of potatoes?
No, he's more like a bag of tater tots. He's still there, you know. He's still holding on.
I love tater tots.
God, I love my kids don't. And I don't know. I failed as a parent.
Man.
Well, I even tried taking the, you know, like the tater tot casserole with the cheese, you know. Yeah. And no, they'll eat the hell out of hash browns. I'm like, it's a tater tot.
Tater tots are like hash brown bites.
I know, they're delicious.
Or hash brown nuggets. It's like, you like chicken nuggets?
Yeah.
Well, you should like tater tots. It's like hash brown nuggets.
Right, like Cool Hand Luke, I could eat a bag of tater tots.
Why'd you have to say tater tots? Why didn't you say mashed potatoes?
His attack. That's a miss.
Miss.
I mean, miss.
Hit.
Woo! I mean, kill this son
of
a bitch.
Holy shit! That would be a 12, Alex.
You did 12 points damage.
Yes, yes.
Holy shit!
Can I save up some of those for the next monster?
He did one of those things where, like, they do in like the kung fu movies, where like he stands there and then part of him just slides off to the ground.
I love those things.
he's down.
I thought it was more like the Indiana Jones, like when the dude like got where the airplane came around and the propeller basically turned him into like red spray.
You know how disappointed I was that plane actually wasn't in World War II? It just looked cool, so they put it in the movie. Yeah.
He's like, "Urgh!" With his fists up. Oh, what's he going to do now? All right. What's up? We done?
Well, they're dead.
Okay,
There are two ex-bugbears.
I'm going to get me some mushrooms.
All right.
I look around. Wait, before I do that, I look around for any treasure or useful tools or anything.
Well, considering there's piles of rocks everywhere and these guys are pretty bad off and there's like rat bones here and there that you figure they're probably feasting on. Altogether, you find a grand total of 8 copper pieces betwixt the two of them.
I'm taking those bad boys, man. Hey, people complain about the penny until you get to one of those machines at the museum where you put the penny in the machine, you turn that crank, and it flattens the penny out, and everybody always it looks like a train or something. Like, you flatten it out, there's a picture of a train on one side and then like Casey Jones on the other. Then everybody, you have to have this long conversation about, did we just commit a federal crime by defacing money? And somebody else goes, did you see the sign on the thing? It said, no, you didn't commit a federal crime. But anyway, if you didn't pick up those copper pieces, you wouldn't be able to do that. There might be a museum by the cave, a mushroom museum.
Well, you look at those eight copper pieces and you tell yourself, this is eight beers. So that's a good score.
There you go.
You know what's funny? Do you remember being a kid and like people telling you that like if you put a penny on the railroad tracks, you could like derail a train?
Yeah, yes.
And it never occurred to us, how are there not trains laying everywhere that, you know, like a leaf would land on the track and it would just derail, you know, 30 car train would just collide.
So I didn't go that direction. The direction I went was, well, how shitty are the people that build railroads that they would, like, I was like, that can't be.
It's got to be just that. I mean, any deviance, you know, in the track would just be catastrophic.
Well, the truth is, if you tie up a person laying across the tracks, especially a damsel.
Yes. And if you have the really fast playing piano music.
Yes. And long mustaches.
That's right.
All right. I'm going to the cave to get some mushrooms.
All right. You head back down the little incline that these guys were using to go up and down. And you proceed south along the foothills until it gets about noon, you figure. And off to your right, you see up about maybe 20, 30 feet up the hill, you see a cave entrance about the size of, probably just big enough for, a little bit bigger than, well, you and then your big 80s hair, you know, could probably fit through it. You wonder, I mean, it's been a couple of hours, you figure, is this the cave? Is this not the cave? You're no spelunker. How do you know this is a cave?
I'm going to that cave. If there's no other cave around the place, I reckon that must be the cave then, I reckon.
You get to the cave entrance, and it looks like it goes deep into the ground. But after about 20 or 30 feet, it curves off, and you can't see what's going on because it's extremely dark.
I'm seeing if I have a torch. Well, I mean, every movie I've ever seen with a cave, there's always a torch still lit in inside the cave, right? National Treasure, they went in there, and nobody's been in there since 1782, but somehow there are still torches in there, still lit.
And right? Somehow that wood is just as solid and useful as it ever was. You know what killed me about that second movie?
What?
Why did Nicolas Cage go on the run after he, you know, helped the president of the United States when all the president would have to do is go, hey, that guy saved me. He's not a criminal. He's with me. But no, Nicolas Cage has to run off and be a fugitive. And that's, and the president never went, no, he's okay. Let him go.
You know what I want to see?
Hmm.
I want to see a crossover event where the Da Vinci Code and National Treasure, like there's Tom Hanks runs into Nicolas Cage.
That would be hysterical.
He's like, wait, what are you doing here? Well, I'm trying to decipher the code that was embedded in the Easter Island statues. What are you doing here? Well, I've brought the Articles of Confederation with me, and there's a map on the back of them, but I have to be on Easter Island to be able to read the map. And Tom Hanks just looks at him and goes, Eh, get the fuck out.
That's right. Those movies are terrible.
All right, well, got nothing else to do. Going in the cave.
It's pitch dark in the cave.
And I look around for a torch.
There are no torches.
I leave the cave.
Okay.
This is the part. Okay, so if we were playing Dungeons and Dragons, we'd mm-hmm. have a, you know, group of people be playing, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And be like, oh man, what should we do? I don't know. So it's dark. I don't know what to do. And we'd be, you know, we'd be trying to figure out what to do, right? And it would be fine because we'd be drinking, we'd be joking around. It's like, I got to go to the bathroom, get up and go to the bathroom. The problem is, we're doing a show. And I have no idea. I'm like, okay, there's a cave. It's dark. I'm like, I got nothing. I don't know. It's like, it's dark. Well, what do you want me to do? There's no torches. I got nothing. I don't have a flashlight. It's like, am I supposed to keep walking? Am I supposed to go into the dark cave? What am I supposed to do?
Make an intelligence roll.
Nope.
You don't have a fucking idea what to do. All you right. Figure I can just walk blindly into this cave, but I can't figure out how to make a torch. So your choice is, do you go into the cave and fumble around or go find a torch? What do you do?
Go find a torch.
All right. Where would you find a torch?
Somewhere else. Because I've already looked here and there isn't one. So I have to go somewhere else to find a torch.
Where would be the most logical place to look for a torch?
This feels like the where they brought the witch to Sir what's his name. And what else floats?
All right.
Wood.
Make another intelligence roll, but this time I'm gonna say at a 9 inclusive.
10. I made it.
Here's what you figure out you can do. Somewhere you find a stick. You pull off part of your cloak, wrap it around the stick, spray it down with Aquanet for your 80s hair, and light it, and lo and behold, you now have a torch. So now you have your lit torch. What do you do?
I go into the cave.
As you step into the cave, it starts to decline for about maybe 20 feet and starts to open up and turns to your left. Still gradually descending. You figure you're walking for about maybe 30 more feet at the turn when it opens up into this massive cave, probably 40 feet wide, maybe 12, 14 feet high. There's stalactites. It's making the drippy sound. And the floor of the cave is covered in
mushrooms.
Like moss, and there's like mud and some like where water has risen to the surface on the mud because the mud's too dense to absorb any more water. But beyond that, on the far side of the cave,
mushrooms
are littered mushrooms.
Yes, I go get some mushrooms.
They're all over the place. All right, so you slog through the mud and the water.
Yep.
And what do you do?
Get some mushrooms.
All right. So you're plucking mushrooms off of the wall
mm-hmm.
and loading them up into your backpack or your sack, I assume.
My sack, yes.
Yes, all right. Make a dex save at a 7 inclusive.
I made it. 18. Got it. All right.
Beneath you, the muddy water shifts.
Muddy water.
The muddy waters shifts. You almost lose your balance, but because you made your dex save, you did not.
The thrill is gone.
That's B.B. King.
Same guy.
Yes. The ground beneath you shifts, and this large thing slithers up out of the murk. scurries up the wall and kind of arcs over the entrance of the cave. You notice it's just this massive, massive lizard.
Ooh.
Just covered in mud and mushrooms and dripping water. Now the water is just dripping down over the cave entrance. It's like up over it, kind of blocking you from leaving. What do you do?
So what is this plus two whip of the serpent python?
That is it's essentially similar to like, it's like Moses' staff, but it's a whip. It will turn into a snake and attack for you.
That's what I do. I get out my whip and I make it turn into a snake and attack for me.
Whenever it's your turn to attack, you get two attacks. Your attack and the snake's attack.
Nice.
All right. So after you whip your whip out and it turns into a snake, that would be initiative.
Rolling the 10-sider.
God damn it.
9.
10.
Ah!
I'm the king of bad initiative rolls.
All right.
Okay, so your whip has turned into a 18-foot python?
Yes, sir. Okay. Yes, it has.
All right. So what do you do?
Well, you got initiative, so...
No. Low roll goes first.
The python attacks first.
All right.
Thaco of 15.
Lizard's armor class is 5.
13. Hit. There's one. 3. All right. Python did 8.
All right. The lizard is pretty well constricted and will have to make probably a bend bars or lift gates roll to escape, but it's also your turn, Sally.
Yeah, the bastard sword.
Oh.
16. I hit.
Damn. Is this,
you said it's large, right?
Oh, it's big.
11 damage.
Well, between you and your snake.
Yes.
It is now an ex-lizard. It is dead.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go.
It just, and when it drops, your snake turns back into a whip because its job is done.
I pick up the whip, and then I nay-nay. I'm taking my motherfucking mushrooms and going back to the fucking witch to make some goddamn potion.
Okay, so... you hastily flee the cave and make your way. And you notice on your way that you're starting to break out in a cold sweat. So you figure whatever poison she gave you is possibly starting to take effect.
Man, I feel like Snake Plissken in Escape from New York.
Yeah, that's exactly what you feel like. In fact, all right, you make it back to her hut in plenty of time.
Bitch, better make me some potion. And a sandwich.
She takes the bag of mushrooms and opens them up and she's like looking at them. She's like, these are very nice. These will go very nice in my soup.
Okay.
And then she tells you, as far as that poison goes, no, you're just going to feel uncomfortable for a couple more hours. When I heard that Nasnib, the Troll Slayer, was looking for Sally, Queen of the Sword, I had to find out just what the metal was of this so-called Sally. And I'm convinced now that whatever he wants you for...
So-called Sally, wasn't that a CCR song in the 70s?
That was Long Tall Sally.
Oh, okay. Go on.
This so-called Queen of the Sword, whatever, I had to find out for sure if she was worth all the fuss to find her. And if you survived the lizard in the cave, I'm sure you will survive whatever it is that the king has waiting for you.
I think that's something Jim Morrison said. If you can survive the... You can survive the lizard in the cave. All right. So I pull out my one-handed... No, wait. I pull out my silver dagger, hold it in front of me, pointing it at her. I say, I have two questions. One, who in the hell do you think you are? And two, why shouldn't I kill you right now?
She says, if you were to kill me, if people in this village were to get sick, who would they turn to?
Well, if... Apparently, if people in this village get sick, you send them up to some damn cave to fight some lizard and bring you back some lunch, right? So I don't know who they'd go to, but if they come to you, you sure as hell ain't gonna help them. You're just, maybe next time you'd be like, go give me a sandwich and I'll cure your black death. They get back with the sandwich and they'll go, thanks for the sandwich. You don't really have the black death. I just wanted the sandwich. What are you, a major pharmaceutical company? Now answer the first part of my question. Who are you?
I am Cassandra.
Why shouldn't I kill you?
If you were to kill me, not only would this village suffer any ailment, but you would also lose favor in the eye of one Jutanus Mindbender.
Did you say Jutanus?
Jutanus Mindbender.
Jutanus. Ah, I see what's happening here.
Roll your intelligence.
13. I made it.
Jutanus Mindbender is the sage of Nasniv Trollslayer, and he is also one of the most reputed as one of the most powerful wizards in the realm.
Okay.
Ooh. Also a notorious philanderer? Is that the word I'm looking for?
Philanderer? Okay, so does he sleep around with a lot of women, or does he give away a lot of stuff?
No, that's a philanthropist.
Right.
So you put two and two together and figure that Cassandra and Jutanus have probably knocked elven boots at some point in the past. And to do something against Cassandra would probably incur the wrath of...
Okay, look. Let me make this a little simpler for you. I'll ask my question a little bit more simply. I came here. I had to kill these bugbear things after they threw rocks at me, right? I had to go to this cave and fight this damn lizard, right? Get these mushrooms, bring them back so you can make some soup. And your explanation is you wanted to see how good I was, right? Mm-hmm. At fighting things.
Yes.
You better start explaining to me why I care other than telling me about your sexual exploits. All right? Who are you to test me? I should be testing you. Tell you what, I just poison you and I want a meatball sandwich. No, tell you what, Philly cheesesteak sandwich. And you got to go to Philadelphia, which doesn't even exist yet, bring it back, and then I'll make a potion to cure you. Because I want to test you, because I don't know who you are. How's that,
bitch? Save versus spell.
All right, nope, didn't make it.
Cue the porno music. You got a lot of ass for a second level fighter.
Hey, thanks for listening. As I said earlier, feedback is welcome. If you like the T&D segment, give us some love there. If you didn't like it, you know, keep it to yourself, and we'll take your silence as
let everyone else enjoy it.
Yeah. If you like the history segment, we'll do that maybe once a month or so. If you have an idea for a story you would like me to research and tell, be happy to do that. Tell you what, man, we haven't asked for money. We've asked for feedback. We'd also ask you to tell your friends, because if each one of you told somebody, we'd go from a dozen listeners to two dozen listeners, and so on, right? So you're either listening because you feel sorry for us, or you like the show, right? If you like the show, then do your friends a favor, you know? and tell them about the show. Thank you. Thank you very much. With that, we'll be back next week with another episode of the Don't Panic Radio Show. Oh, and might I point out, this is episode 151, which equals the Do an Indie Radio Hour, which ended after 151 episodes. So starting with next week's episode, we will now have surpassed. Next week, we will have had more shows than the Do It Indie Radio Hour.
Maybe by next week, I'll get you a copy of Strunk and White so you can figure out.
I know,
out
right?
Which...
Am I right? I can't figure out. All right. So, for Sally, for Ernie Shackleton, and for Paul Schultz, I'm Steve Vincent, and nothing you just heard was true.
She came to me one morning, one lonely Sunday morning, her long hair flowing in the midwinter wind. I know not how she found me, for in darkness I was walking, and destruction lay around me from a fight I could not win.
Say hello for me. Ah, 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 ah. bullshit.